our angel investors, what was amazing about them was that they had been operators like you, you know, they had been operators themselves before, founders. And so in that way, they could contribute more than just money. They really contributed a lot in terms of network, in terms of skill themselves. And it was really beneficial for us.
This is FEMA Business Angel Podcast,
your go-to destination if you're a business angel or would like to get into angel investing and don't know where to start.
Or if you just want to find out how we tick. We're Tina and Katja, both business angels from Berlin. Well, I'm a VC now. We will interview established FEMA business angels about how they got started and how it is going, including all the best tips and tricks.
So get ready for some insider stories and personal empowering moments and revelations with these incredible women.
Welcome to this journey with us.
Hello from the beautiful Scene Ventures studio. So Scene Ventures is a pre-seed fund investing in early stage startups in the love cool products. And yeah, you can check it out at scene.io. And today we have a super, super cool guest who is Emma Tracy. She's a former co-founder and CMO of Honeypot. She's currently a venture scout for B Capital, venture fund focusing on B2B SaaS. And she has some plans for the future as well. She cannot reveal yet, but we want to talk to Emma about her professional career so far, her interests, passion, and especially angel investing, as this is the topic of this podcast. Welcome, Emma.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Of course. Tell us a bit about yourself. What are you doing? What was your journey?
Sure, yeah. So, I'm from Ireland originally. I moved to Berlin about 7 years ago after a career in journalism and also founding a communications agency prior to moving to Berlin. And I moved here with the intent to found something, also with the intent to be back in Europe, a bit closer to family again. And I founded Honeypot in 2015 with my co-founder Kaya. And Honeypot is a developer-focused job platform. We exited from Honeypot in 2019 to Tsing, or New Work, as the whole company is called now. And I left the company at the end of 2020, so around December 2020. So it's crazy. It's almost been a year now.
Yeah.
Time goes fast. Yeah. And so that's kind of my entry point then into angel investing via the exit of the company. And it's been an exciting few months since then.
That's really cool. So did you jump straight into angel investing after leaving the company? How did your first angel investment happen?
Yeah, the first angel investment actually was kind of an interesting one. It just came really through my network, almost directly after the exit, actually. So we exited in April 2019. And in May or June, someone which I knew fairly well from kind of like the developer scene in Berlin and from particularly from GraphQL came and approached me and said he was doing a new angel round. And so it was like a bit intimidating, you know, at first. To kind of think through like, okay, well, what exactly is involved with an angel investment? How do I evaluate it? Am I making the right decision, et cetera? And obviously exit, it was, you know, the first time in my life really that I've had a big, a bigger amount of money. So, you know, I was a bit intimidated by it all. But I was so happy that in the end that I ended up doing that angel investment, and it was a super small ticket, but it kind of gave me the first steps in. It gave me a bit of confidence, and the company has been doing incredibly well since then. It's a company called Graph CMS. And so that was my first entry into angel investing.
That's really cool. Were you in touch with angel investors while when you were a founder yourself?
We were actually, yeah. So we
did you pitch to them or did they approach you? How was it?
Yeah, so we did have angel investors in Honeypot, and we had some really amazing ones. So one I frequently talk about is Felix Plog. He was the founder of, or one of the co-founders of, Foodpanda. And he came on board because I actually went to see him talk at a family event. And he was talking about how to scale a business. And he actually gave a shout out in that to Honeypot, saying something like, you know, you really have to think about different channels to use, especially in developer hiring. And we're using Honeypot and we love it. And I was in the audience and like, oh, that's so cool. Like, so I wrote him on LinkedIn and then we kind of got to know each other. And in the end, he became an angel investor, which was a great lesson to me of like staying involved, you know, in the community of attending events, connecting with people. And you never know where it's going to lead. And so our angel investors, what was amazing about them was that they had been operators like you, you know, they had been operators themselves before, founders. And so in that way, they could contribute more than just money. They really contributed a lot in terms of network, in terms of skill themselves. And it was really beneficial for us.
So they were like extended strategic team.
Exactly. Yeah.
Which is really cool.
Super helpful.
Yeah. And then, so you exited your company and you jumped straight into angel investing by accident.
Yeah.
Did you plan for that or were you going to travel the world and see what's next?
Yeah.
And how many angel investments have you done since then?
Yeah. So, I mean, I definitely had eventually a plan that I wanted to travel the world, but COVID came, obviously. Yeah. So that first angel investment was while I was still with Honeypot. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't do another angel investment for a year after that, actually. And
I think I had the same timeline, like start from the first angel investment. Year passed.
Oh, nice. Yeah. And what was the reason for you?
I just didn't find anything,
yeah.
Or it didn't find me. But yeah, I think that's the lesson, I guess. No rush.
Exactly. Yeah. I think it's a really interesting way to do it because I think you learn a lot by kind of getting the, you know, investor updates, seeing how the companies run, and you understand how to ask better questions. So that nice speed, slower speed is useful, right?
And you learn a lot by due diligence in companies as well. So like, I don't always try to be mindful of founders' time and never waste their time. But I mean, you're being approached, you approach companies. So you learn a lot, even if you don't invest yet, or even
100%.
If they don't want you as an angel investor, maybe either.
Totally. So it was a year between my first investment and my second one. And I think the motivation coming into 2020 was I wasn't working at all anymore with Honeypot. I had intended to travel, but COVID.
Yeah, COVID,
we all know, right? And so I wanted to demystify a little bit this side of growing a business. I wanted to see what it felt like on the other side of the table. And so I started taking angel investment much more seriously and really talking to a lot of different companies. And so since that time, I've done four angel
That's
investments.
Cool.
Yeah.
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 How did, I mean, during the COVID, we were all sitting, well, in our flats and on Zoom. So did you just start reaching out to people, telling them, hey, I'm doing some angel investments now? Or how did that happen? Because I found it really challenging to, I also love attending events, meeting new people, but this networking part was really hard. You could meet someone for a coffee walk, like under the snow and rain. And then there were these Zoom conferences and hop in, came in, virtual networking, but I don't know. I found it exhausting as well a bit. It was cool, but...
It can be exhausting. I mean, I think you're like the master networker, to be honest. You were one of the first people I met towards the start of my angel investment journey, and you helped introduce me to quite a few people. And I think that's like a big thing, you know, try to identify people who are already active and seek advice from them. Maybe they don't always have time, and that's part of the game. Don't be offended if people don't reply. You know, that's just
they
part
don't
of it.
Mean it.
They don't mean it badly. Yeah. Try to get connected into different angel groups. So, I mean, there's some great Slack groups for angel investing, particularly for female investors. We're both part of Evangelistas, for example. And attending events, talking to former colleagues, employees, and kind of just getting the word out that you are looking to invest. It's just a process of making your intent, I guess, as visible as possible, even though it can be very tiring.
Yeah. I mean, your background is in marketing and in PR, so I guess you're a master of that as well.
Well, let's see, hopefully.
Yeah, we met through the Common Angel Investment through Remy.
Exactly.
So it's a cultural OS for remote teams to female founders who really wanted to have half of their cap table with female investors. And I think they managed at the end.
They did, yeah. It was really impressive.
It's not the classical setup, unfortunately, but that's what we are striving for, right? 50-50.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, the cool thing was the second investment that I did after that, Vitamin is what it's called. It's a financial planning tool.
Andrea.
Yeah, exactly.
Andrea.
they also have a very strongly female-led cap table, which is really cool to see and makes a lot of sense for that product.
Yeah.
And you see that, I think, now more often. I don't know if you agree that people are specifically looking for a more diverse cap table than they have been in the past.
That's why we started this podcast as well. So we are being approached by female founders and they asked for angel investors, for female angel investors. And normally they name a few women who are always in the press, who are role models for us. We would like to have them at the podcast, at this podcast here at some point. But also, if you're just one person, you cannot be on the cap table of all female founders. You cannot physically, even if you had money for that, you just can't go to, I don't know, 20 notary meetings.
Exactly.
Yeah, per week. And also, as an angel investor, you have to understand a bit the topic. What the startup is building, you have to relate yourself to. You have to get along with the people. We are all different. And so we decided, okay, why not to shine a light on, well, female angel investors, like other female angel investors who are not every week in the press, maybe, and maybe who are doing less investment, but they are still there and it might be the perfect fit for a female founder out there.
Yeah,
so
it makes a lot of sense.
The reasons, for this podcast.
Yeah, I love that. I think it makes a lot of sense. I mean, it's now not just enough to have a diverse team. I think having a diverse cap table as well really reflects on you as a founder and your ambitions, I think, for where you want to take the company and what type of product you want to grow. So I'm glad to see initiatives like this which shine more light on it and also knock down the barriers, because it's intimidating at first, but I think like podcasts like this really are demystifying it and showing that it's not as difficult as it seems.
Yeah, I agree. It's a bit of imposter syndrome feeling. Could be.
If
you're not, so we had ladies here, they are coming from the financial background, M&A, so for them it was more natural maybe. But yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah.
It's like you feel like you're not, you're like in the wrong shoes maybe. Yeah.
I can totally relate to that, because I studied literature in university, literature and film, so not coming from a finance background at all. And so, yeah, building the company as well, like learning, everything about P&L and everything about financial reporting was kind of, a big step to take. And then learning a little bit more about finance and investment also was kind of an area that I just wanted to make sure I understood.
I
think any person, any woman as well out there, like just that sense of being able to reach financial independence is really positive and really inspiring. So
yeah, because they can help other women. They can improve the world. So what is your criteria? Like, what is your investment focus you are looking for? And how did your experience as a founder shape it, I guess?
So I care a lot about the team. So I want to see that there's kind of a good mix of skills. And I want to see that there's determination and grit in the founding team. And I want to see that they care really about the users who they're ultimately serving. Because I think you need to have that kind of like passion for what you're solving to be able to keep going in the really hard times. And I like to be able to see that founders just themselves can at least get the product somewhere off the ground, so I like to see a kind of a good mix of skills. So I really start with the team. And then I like products which I can understand, essentially, I mean, I've been working now in HR tech marketplaces for quite some time. And then, of course, I look at B2C products, which I would use myself. So that's, I mean, it's quite broad, I think, in terms of what I would potentially invest into. But I do want to understand, the use.
Yeah. And start, so I have to understand them, but something where I'm not that experienced yet, but I could learn. But then I need to have a feeling that they kind of need my expertise, for example, in sales or the staff.
Yeah, I mean, so it's nice to feel like you can, exactly, you can help.
I'm not the lead investor, so. That's interesting. And moving forward, so you are scouting for big capital and you will continue your own angel investments, like, selectively, I guess. So will you have, like, prioritized differently? Do you look, is it a different angle you use to evaluate deal flow?
So right now I've really, like, stopped my own personal angel investment. So I'm starting my own new company and I'm obviously investing into that. And I didn't want to have too many different focuses. So I'm doing my own company and I'm doing the Venture Scout program with Peak. And for Peak, yeah, I'm looking kind of at B2B SaaS marketplaces.
Yeah, but I don't know. Have you ever received, like, a really crazy pitch or where you approach, like, in a really, like, some extraordinary way or unusual way by a founding team that you would remember and you would like to share on this podcast?
I mean, I have huge respect for anyone who puts themselves out there, you know, and shares a pitch. It's not an easy thing to do, to put out an idea, put yourself out there. So I really respect anyone who comes forward actually with a pitch. I think one thing which I saw, which I really liked, was a very, very young team. I didn't actually end up investing into them, but they actually shared, like, a video of themselves pitching it. And I mean, if
they just send it.
And they sent it, yeah. And some parts of it felt a little bit like, kind of a bit unprofessional, but in a charming way, you know, and it did make me remember them and it did make me reflect. And I remember their products still. And I like connected with them on LinkedIn and things like that. And so that was nice. And it was memorable. But as I said, like, even if it is kind of an idea, which I would find crazy or, you know, like, wild or whatever, I still have huge, huge, massive respect for anyone who does it. Because, yeah, I mean, it's such a hard thing to do, to put yourself out there and have an idea.
Did you have to be in that role or did you bootstrap it? Did you have, like, clients and, I don't know, paying clients from the beginning? So you were kind of growing organically and you didn't have to do many pitches and in kind of investor relations?
Yeah, so luckily my co-founder Kaya was quite well connected in the Berlin scene already. So he did a family and friends round, which started us. And then we were very quick to revenue with our model and quite high ticket size per hire. We did go out and look for VC, but in the end, it didn't end up happening for a variety of reasons. And I think timing was probably a big one of those. And that experience, that was tough, you know, like, that was one of those things where we said, okay, like, we're really going to have to now focus and just make this company so appealing that it's impossible to say no. And we did do that after about 6 months from the time that a VC said no to us. We actually ended up kind of signing with these angels, and then about 12 or 18 months after that, we ended up exiting the company. Yeah, so
that was really quick.
Yeah, from like a very low point to a high point, you know. And but so I know the feeling of rejection. I know, like, how tough it can be. And, you know, fundraising, I think, for any first-time founders is something which is like a full-time job. And I think the best angels, like, really take that into account and aren't over demanding about the time that they're taking away from founders.
Yeah. What advice would you give to the first-time founders? How much time should they spend trying to raise a round from the VCs? Like, how many weeks or months? When should they just maybe give up and do a different strategy?
Yeah.
What would you recommend?
I mean, I guess it really depends on which round and stuff they're going for. I think it's really, really great to start with an angel round because it tends to be less intensive. And also you can kind of account for the skills which you don't have as strongly represented within your team. And so if you don't have someone who comes from an investment or a finance background, definitely try to get an angel that does come from that. And that person, then you can rely on them to tell you, okay, given your market, given your stage, how long should you actually be spending on this pitch? But do account for, 95% time of at least one founder for at least 3 months, I would say, because it's such a time intensive process if you really want to do it right.
And then there are also, so from what I've learned, there are like fundraising peaks, kind of seasons. So for example, now it's almost over. Mm-hmm. So everyone is moving towards to sit under the Christmas tree with a mulled wine, so to go on ski holiday.
Yeah.
And then it starts again, I guess, late January, something like that. And then in the summer, it's the same. I think August is, I don't know, August, July is like a holiday season. So it's kind of from, I don't know, would you agree? It's like January to July, and then maybe, I don't know, September to like December, which is like a very hot
phase. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And it's probably good to plan your time around that and your holidays.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, you also need holidays as a founder. That's important.
Yeah. Although I wish I had have told my younger self that.
You did not have holidays.
Not for the first few years of Honeypot, no.
Yeah. But that was an amazing ride, I guess.
Yeah, it was. So, I mean, I loved it, and I loved the team there. Worth it.
Yeah. And I like the approach of trying to figure out what is the skill set you don't have in the founding team or in the like the early team at your startup, and try to win angels with the skill set. And if you cannot get them angel invest, I think another strategy would be to get them on your advisory board.
Totally, yeah. Right?
As an advisor or...
Yeah, have you done that? Are you on an advisory board?
So I've done that and I've seen that as well. So, but yeah, that's my recommendation to the founders. I mean, I'm new to that and I'm learning so much. I think I have a feeling that I'm learning more than people learn from me. But again, so it's fascinating and very passionate about it. And I think, you should look at it holistically. And it's like, okay, because I've seen so many pitch decks, and then you see, okay, you have like these three people or two people co-founding the company, but then you have these advisors and these angels supporting the cause. And if you know one of the advisors and of the angels, it's it builds trust, and you can get some references, and maybe you worked with one of the advisors together.
Yeah.
So I had that in one company, for example.
Oh, cool.
And then I just called him and... Yeah.
That's perfect. Yeah. So that's actually a really good tip, I think, for founders then, to think like that as well.
Yeah. So it gives you like more credibility maybe. And also if you get on board more experienced people or people who've done that before.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, we actually at Honeypot had three quite senior developers also involved in the open source community that's on our advisory board. And that was, so useful for us in terms of building credibility in the developer community.
Yeah. What would you say, like from the founder's perspective and now from the investor's perspective, what's the right cadence to kind of meet your angel investors or advisors? Is it like once per quarter, or I don't know, is there a good frequency to kind of, get them involved, but not too much?
Maybe? Yeah. I mean, our angel investors were great because they were so hands-off, I think, and they were there when we needed them, one kind of came in and really helped us with a strategic project and actually stayed in the company and worked in the company with us for that amount of time and really ingrained himself, which was really cool. And it was really interesting. He became so much more effective then in his advice in the future. One came in and literally helped for about 20 minutes to just craft the kind of the wording and the story around the vision, which was unbelievably valuable as well. For me, the best angels from a founder's perspective are the ones who are hands off, but there when you need them, when you ask for their help, essentially. And from an angel perspective, now myself, I try to apply that same thing. So I do try to invest into companies where I can be helpful, but I don't assume a role. I don't assume there's a role for me. I wait and I see if they need something and ask. And I think like a big thing about angels that's useful for founders is actually just their network and their connections more than anything else.
Yeah. And I think maybe the outsider's perspective also, come in and just, I don't know, make a suggestion to the wording or how to frame your vision. And you're not kind of professionally blind. You're not doing it for 5 or 6 days per week. You just come in and you see things differently. So like the fresh perspective.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
But we had Gloria Boyerlein here on the podcast last couple of weeks ago. And she was talking about being a pull angel. So it's not a push angel, but they can pull her.
If they need her. I like that. Yeah, that's very cool.
Yeah, for me, sometimes I feel like, okay, I was not helpful for months. Maybe I should like reach out. Maybe I should do something. But I think that's, I'm going to learn from you, ladies. That's a good strategy. Yeah, that's super cool. So how should startups approach you if they have a B2B SaaS product? Should they just reach out on LinkedIn?
Exactly. Yeah. So just reach out to me on LinkedIn. And usually sending the pitch up front as well is great. I really always appreciate that too.
Yeah. Exciting. That's really cool.
Cool.
And maybe just to, I don't know, like to close down. So we have two questions. So one would be if you could change one thing in, I don't know, in the world, like what would it be? It would be something like that.
Wow.
It's a bit, it's kind of big, but.
Great question.
First thing that comes to mind.
So many things are racing through my head right now, but probably one of the things would be seeing more women with like young children or pregnant women being involved in business and kind of visually like there, you know, I don't know if this makes sense, but like to have more representation basically of women who are either pregnant or with young families in business, in cultural life, in angel investment.
Yeah. Different life stages.
Yeah. To kind of show that it's possible.
Yeah. Okay. That's one for me. Totally.
Yeah. But so many things popped into my head, but yeah, this is definitely one of them.
The first thought. Yeah, I totally agree. I think, when you become a mother, it becomes your full-time job, like sometimes at least for the first month, so for the year. But then, I mean, of course, you also have this intellectual curiosity and you used to be part of this incredibly buzzing like startup world. So, when I started to angel invest, I had my daughter at home. Mm-hmm. She was still very young. We had sleepless nights. So I decided, okay, I cannot go and work for a startup or build a company now because I'm just sleep deprived and I cannot work for 8 hours per week like I maybe used to, including, of course, party and traveling. No one can work 8 hours per week, basically. And I decided, okay, but I really want to be involved. So that's how I started mentoring startups advising and... Because I was still working at Spotify and I had my startup at home with a little Nina.
So cool. I love that. So you're like turning kind of the limited time into actually a chance for something totally new.
Because I wanted to be involved, but I could not physically like work there as an operator. Because they had like another startup, a job, and then said, okay, I can be maybe strategically valuable or I can leverage my network and my experience. And so that's how it happened. And maybe just to recap, so what is the advice you would give to the female angel investors if you could give like, I don't know, 3 bullet points or like do this, to that?
So, I think the first one is network. So, get to know people who are already doing this, get to know founders and just get involved, go to events, do whatever it takes just to get to know people, and don't underestimate how amazing it is to kind of build up your network. The second piece of advice is probably angel investment sounds like it's something that takes a lot of capital, but actually the investment sizes can be much smaller than you think. You can also even start in syndicated deals, also via platforms like angel.co. And you can start to understand and learn more about terminology, how other investors look at deals, what your criteria are. And understanding that criteria for yourself is really important. Like, what are you interested in? Where do you want to make a difference in the world? What kind of things do you want to invest in? And I think then the third thing is don't be intimidated. Just do it. Just start investigating, start understanding. And just take the step. It's fun.
That's perfect. Yeah. So summarize. So network, build your network. Don't underestimate it. Get involved. Just start, and maybe start with syndicates or with just helping, and then define your criteria. How would you like to see the world tomorrow, and support it.
Exactly.
Join the movement.
Yeah. Cool.
Well, thanks, Emma.
Thanks for having me.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.